Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Scottish Watches Podcast, the show that two broke watch snobs say is the biggest and the best watches podcast on the internet.
Did they really say that?
Who would be to argue with them? They will this week.
Right.
They will this week by the time I clip their audio together to make them say it. I'm thinking that maybe in a week or so's time, there's probably enough online material from, say, Hodinkee for us to, doctor their voices to say that we are the greatest thing to the sliced bread. So I'm working on that particular scam just now.
Okay, two things. One, this sounds like some kind of movie plot where you're cutting together a ransom note with audio, right, to bypass somebody's audio verification system. And two, you're getting good at audio editing, so you're going to start editing the shows from now on and save me all this time.
As soon as you give me the passwords, let me loose.
Okay, but, I'll keep doing it. It's fine.
That's a potentially... I think if you were to ask our audience, they would probably recommend that you giving me carte blanche on the passwords, the audio processing, and everything would be a bad move in your particular case and would almost certainly result in us not doing very many more episodes, or in fact me just doing them solo and just cutting you out of everything.
Well, do you not remember maybe half an hour ago sending a message to me asking for a password because you've forgotten it three times now?
It's not that I've forgotten it, it's that you have a habit of, you've obviously got one of these password generators. I just use password 1234, but you've just got one of these password generators that gives you all this gobbledygook.
That's called being secure.
And clearly can't remember. Yeah, to which you asked me, had I not written it down, which kind of defeats the purpose.
I said, did you not keep the email?
Well, probably, I can't find it. You have never mind. How many emails
anyway,
are in my inbox.
Never mind. We've got a guest, so do you want to do the honours and introduce our guest?
We do. We have a guest from Christopher Ward, but it's not Christopher Ward.
Oh.
It is, in the same way that I am the brains behind this team, I'm reliably informed that this gentleman is the brains behind the Christopher Ward team. He may or may not wish to admit to that when he actually gets a chance to speak in a few moments' time. But we have been joined from his office in, is it Maidenhead?
It is.
Where's your... Ah, you see. We are joined by Mike France from Christopher Ward. Say hello to everybody.
Hi, guys, and hello to everybody else. Obviously, the most listened to show on the internet. I'm honoured.
We're a close fifth place behind Gardner's Question Time from Radio 4.
It's good enough for me.
That's my ambition. We managed it once. We managed to get ahead of them in the charts once. And I thought that was it. I thought it was then time for me to pack up and just go home celebrating that I had beaten Monty Don and Co. But Ricky wants me to keep trying. He wants to get to number two and beat some podcast about role play or cosplay or something that he's into.
I got okay. it. Yeah.
But, so we're getting there.
Well, if you need any advice on what to plant at this time of the year to get you above Gardener's World, then or Gardener's Question Time, I'm not the man. So.
Are you not? I thought you were just about to go, I am the man, and then the question sheet that I've got in front of me was going to completely change.
Sadly, I'm not.
It was going to be all about pruning picking and sowing and all the rest of it, but there we go, composting. You can't beat a good bit of composting, can you, Ricky?
Good bit of composting. wonderful. Yeah.
That should lead us on very... If it wasn't for the fact that this was the very start of the interview, then I would be saying, and that leads us on nicely to talk about the packaging and all the recyclable stuff that Christopher Ward do, but I don't feel we're quite far enough on the show yet to do that.
Our compostable new packaging, yes, indeed.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, first.
It's all linked together. Mm. It's all linked together.
It's slicker than I thought it was going to be, I have to say.
Good stuff. Yeah, you've probably got the tone of this show just about right by now. So my question, first of all, is what's the weather like in Maidenhead? Because it absolutely stinks here in Glasgow.
It's warm and sultry, it has to be said. Yeah. Yeah, it's about 23 degrees, and but no sun shining, but it's a bit sticky.
Oh, well.
But no rain.
It's a bit sticky. All right, okay. It's a bit sticky where Ricky is as well, but that's for entirely different reasons.
That's only because you were here last night.
So, Ricky, how are you?
I am okay.
It's been at least 12 hours since I've seen you.
It's been at least 12 hours since you nearly killed me in your car.
There was a corner where, for a moment, it kind of crept up on us.
Crept up on you, driver.
Is that right?
And after making a prediction as well, saying, well, you know, you're going to be in the car with me in my dodgy driving. Well, your prediction nearly came true.
Well, at least when it's in my car, unlike on your motorbike, the calamity that befalls a person when they do crash or go badly round a bend is not generally quite as calamitous. So I reckon you were in safe hands all along.
If you say so. Okay. No, yesterday was good. We went on a road trip for a future episode that we are not going to talk about right now. But that was that was a fun day out in the wet. So first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. It's really decent of you. And also thanks very much, because when we first started the website and the podcast, start of the year pretty much, one of the first things that we did, or I did, was to come across to Edinburgh when you guys had come up to do your enthusiast group question and answers. And, you know, we were nobodies, and you guys spent the time with me. Chris actually did a short interview as well, and you could have just said, don't know who you guys are, so we're really busy. But no, it was really appreciated, and that's why we're really keen, obviously, to tell the listeners what's been happening in the last almost 6 months since. And you've got the new releases, you've got some tie-ins with the Ministry of Defence, there's lots of news and things we can talk about, and also go through the history of Christopher Ward, because not everybody knows the origin story, where it came from, and how you guys have taken watch sales online to where it is today. So the first question and the most important question is, there's three of you, why is it called Christopher Ward? Did you draw names out of a hat?
More or less, in actual fact. We'd gone through several iterations, as you do when you're setting up a new company. We were nearly called MPC for Mike, Pete and Chris, but we thought that was a bit close to IWC. So we decided against that. Then the next name we came up with was Fennel and Wurzwick, which is interesting in that Fennel is my wife's maiden name. And Wurzwick is Peter's wife's maiden name. Interestingly, Wurzwick is an old Lancashire clock building name, clock making name. So that was quite interesting. But Fennel and Wurzwick sounds like Charles Dickens founded the company a little bit.
Well, I was going to say Wurzel Gummidge.
Yeah, exactly. Wurzel Gummidge or Charles Dickens, you choose. We couldn't think of anything, but we wanted something that wasn't a made-up name. And we wanted something that was real. And we then decided to look at each of our own names. Mike France for a British watch brand is perhaps not the best selection. Peter Ellis is a bit anodyne. And so Chris got lucky, or not, depending on which way you look at it, in that Christopher Ward scans beautifully well and sounds very English. And it was real. And therefore, I decided that we'd call the brand Christopher Ward.
Yeah. And did you ever consider that, seeing as your surname was France and another well-known British brand has a similar issue with the fact that their founders' surnames is all English, that it would actually have been easier for you to, I don't know, crash a car into a field somewhere and just pick the owner, find the name of the owner of said field?
Yeah, it would have been, of course, it would have been a field in England for me to crash a car into, wouldn't it? To be honest, we weren't even aware of our friends in Henley at that point in time. But had we been, I might have come up with what you've just suggested. Brilliant.
It could have been like one of those tribes or old films whereby, to keep the peace, they both swap a member.
Yes, indeed.
So you could have taken on someone that was called English and they could have taken on you, someone's called France. I think that would really have completed the picture.
Let's not rule it out for the future.
Oh, is that a scoop, is it? Is this a merger or an acquisition?
Watch this space.
Is this a merger or an acquisition?
Absolutely, yeah. definitely an acquisition.
That's fighting talk. I like that.
But before we get too far ahead of things, it is time to do the customary wristwatch check. And since you're our guest, and I've got a good idea you might be wearing something from your own brand, can you tell us what you're wearing today?
I hope he's wearing a Bremen.
yeah, no chance of that, I can assure. I can't afford those sorts of prices. I'm wearing a C60 Trident Pro Mark III, black dial, black bezel, with a black hybrid strap.
Right, this is your chance to tell us about the new watch. We've got one of these from you guys for a couple of weeks to test out, and I'm doing a review of it just now, and I actually love it. I mentioned it in a previous edition of the podcast, where I said that I'd been for dinner and went to the cinema, and the most enjoyable part of the whole cinema trip was seeing the loom on your watch glowing for the entire duration of the movie. So can you give us a little bit of information about that watch and, you know, the changes that you've implemented compared to the previous editions?
Sure. I mean, we were heading towards the 10th anniversary of introducing the Trident collection, And it was January 2015 that we'd introduced Mark II. So back at the end of 2017, we decided that to celebrate the 10th anniversary, it was a timely moment to introduce Trident Mark III. Now, to be honest, Trident Mark II had been a huge success, was still selling extremely well, and therefore the rationale for doing it had to be that we could significantly improve every aspect of the watch. So the brief that I worked with Adrian Bushman, our senior designer, on was let's take every element of this watch, other than in terms of the Trident Pro, the movement, which we knew would continue to be a Sellita SW200, but every other aspect of the watch, we wanted to see if we could make serious improvements. So from the case design, which we wanted to now reflect our light catcher case design, which has become a signature look for our cases, which Adrian had designed and we first introduced a variant of with the Grand Malvern, and then more recently in 2018 the C65.
And what's the benefits of that case?
Well, its roots are in I'm a bit of a car fiend, one of the things I did when Adrian, when we first started talking about case design, Adrian and I brought, I'm very lucky in that I own an Aston Martin DB9, which today, even today, I still believe is one of the most beautiful cars that's ever been made. Mm-hmm. And when you buy an Aston Martin, they give you a small model of it, a pro forma model of it, before you get the car. It took 2 years to for them to deliver the car, so I think they think this is by some way of making you feel that not too disappointed that you're having to wait so long. But I put the Aston Martin model on the middle of the desk and said, look, you've got to produce a watch case that's as beautiful as the lines of this car, which seriously, if it didn't have an engine in and it wouldn't rip the walls down, I'd hang it on a wall in my house because I think it's that beautiful. And he immediately understood that. And moreover, Adrian understood that car designers are masters at using lines in metal to deflect light and refract light in a way that makes cars sit close to the ground. Because at heart, we're all sort of boy racers and we all want our cars to look like Maseratis and Lamborghinis. And even SUVs these days are use these principles to make them look as if they sit as low as possible. And of course, in a watch, particularly these days, where we all know that size is important, but it's coming down in size that matters in watches at the moment, rather than the rather ridiculous sort of scale of watches of 5 or 6 years ago. So we wanted a watch that sat as low as possible on the wrist, that was as discreet as possible on the wrist, and to do that, you have to engineer the lines of the case to do exactly what those car designers do. And Adrian has created what I believe is fundamentally one of the best case designs I've seen in watches for a long time. And as I say, we first introduced that back into the Grand Malvern, then subtly into the Malvern collection itself, then into the C65 Trident. And of course, it was now time when we introduced the new Trident C60 collection, the Mark III, to bring a more muscular but sympathetic derivation of that light catcher design to the C60 case. So the case is a fundamental redesign and is a stunning piece of watch case architecture, in my view. So that was the first thing we looked to do. Second thing, I suppose, was I don't know how OCD you guys are about stuff, but
quite. Rick, not so much.
most of us are into watches along that spectrum somewhere, aren't we? One of the things about a rotating bezel, and this is a particular thing I have, is a tool watch. Which a dive watch is at heart. I mean, not many people use it for diving, we all know that, but it's a tool. And the rotating bezel and the way that moves and sounds is the most evocative part of it being the tool watch. And in our Mark II, we'd done a pretty good job on the unidirectional bezel of the bezel clicking through and sounding and feeling pretty good as a tool watch.
Well, to let listeners know what that sounds like, I've got mine on here.
Oh, there you go.
It's like an adult fidget spinner.
So
it's okay, don't worry, it's not something rude.
Good. So we embarked upon, and literally, we got the train into train from Maidenhead into town. This was me, Adrian, and our product manager, Jörg Bader Jr. And we spent an entire day going around all of the major watch shops in London, including some of the mono brands. We spent 2.5 hours, for instance, in the Omega shop, because you know the collection of Seamasters was of real interest to us, and we were fortunate that the assistant in the store actually thought we might be buying something, so she was prepared to spend more than 2 hours showing us every single watch there was in the Seamaster collection. And for most of them, we were surreptitiously recording the sound of the bezels as well as notating our views of how they felt. And through the whole day, what transpired is, and this will come as no surprise, I think, to many of your listeners, but by far the best on the market, in our view, in terms of that wonderful sort of visceral noise and feel that a perfectly rotating bezel gives you, was Rolex. And quite a way distant better than anybody else. So that became the standard that we wanted at least to achieve. So our instructions, our engineering drawings, and our work with our case manufacturer were all about reproducing at least the Rolex unidirectional bezel sounds and feel. And it took months and months of iterations of redesign of new technical drawings, and indeed a completely new bezel mechanism, and it's not exactly as Rolex's, but Rolex, to get what they deliver, because we bought some Rolexes and we opened them up, they have a very different mechanism in their bezel than any other watch brand that we were able to discover, and we have our version of that now. And what we've been able to do, and I honestly, is massively improve the sound and the nature and the feel of that rotating bezel. So it's now, did we actually achieve excellence in terms of Rolex level? If I'm absolutely honest, the answer is no. We're just a smidgen away from their level.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been doing it for a long time. Are we better than anybody else, including some very, very, very well-known brands? Yes, I believe we are. And I said to somebody, I'm not going to rest until we match or beat Rolex in terms of the rotating bezel, which tells you that there will be a Trident 4.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of to get to the bezel was a really interesting journey for all of us.
That's interesting. One of the things I noticed when I got the watch through to check out was it had what is known as the Rolex squeak. Do you know what that is?
No, explain.
The Rolex squeak, it's probably one of those very inside baseball terms used on the Rolex forum. When you get a new Rolex, sometimes the tolerances are so tight on the bracelet that it squeaks until you wear it, and it starts to wear down. And when I hold the watch and let the bracelet droop, there's less droop on the Christopher Ward watch than my Rolex, so it's as if the tolerances are actually better on it. So there you go.
Well, I mean, that's to hear that is quite... is quite emotional, actually. Thank you for that. That's that's an unexpected pleasure to hear. Thank you.
So you have got the might of the watchmaker that is Ricky behind you, but I also see that you have the might of Roger Smith who was on Instagram this week. So, okay, how much beer, wine and cigarettes did you need to send him for that endorsement?
Well, I know that Roger doesn't smoke. I know he likes to drink, none of the above. What I do know is I've known Roger for a good while, and despite obviously, I mean, in my humble estimation, he is the greatest living watchmaker of an extraordinary level, you know, in the world today. Mm-hmm. And he's always been, we've always had a good relationship because I think he understands, probably better than anybody else, I suppose, and understood from very early on two things about the Chris Ford brand. One is that we are genuinely transparent and, you know, tell the truth about where stuff comes from, why it comes from, and we don't disguise things like the movement by giving it a funny name, but even though it's an ETA, etc. So he's mm-hmm. always understood that we've always had at our core an attempt to be completely transparent. And the man knows better than virtually anybody in the world quality when he sees it. And he's always been, you know, I think, I can't speak for him, but he's always been very impressed with, you know, at least some of the watches that we produce. Funny enough, I was talking to somebody this morning in a meeting about this very same thing, because they asked a similar question. And I said to them, one of the finest days in my life, never mind at Christopher Ward, was when I received an email from Roger praising us for our C8 Power Reserve, which is the movement of which is our own Calibre SH21. And
is that the GPHG one?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yes. And he completely unsolicited had sent an email out of the blue to congratulate us on it. And the glow, I mean, I could have warmed half a city for a couple of days from the glow, because those things really are really what matter, I suppose. Because mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. when somebody with that knowledge recognises, because they know how hard some of this stuff can be.
Yes.
When they recognise it, it matters a lot. And so, yeah, we're humbled and we're honoured that he's taken the time to firstly buy one of our watches and secondly to post what he posted. So thank you, Roger.
Brilliant. Do you think he'll send it to you for service, or do you think he'll do it himself?
What do you think?
See, that's the one you want. You want, you want the Roger Smith watch that's been serviced by Roger Smith.
Absolutely.
That'll add a few zeros on it.
That'll be a good auction watch, won't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. So that story of the emotion you felt in getting that letter leads me on to a couple of questions. So first of all, I will ask the second question second. I'll ask the first question first. That would seem to make more sense.
It does.
So you came from the background of the Early Learning Centre, mm-hmm. And you got involved in the Swiss watch industry. So for those that don't know what the Early Learning Centre was, it was basically a shop for kids, clothing, toys, all the rest of it, for those that aren't in the UK. So can you tell me, what similarities have you noticed between the customers and the performance in the Early Learning Centre and the Swiss watch industry?
Are you talking about people throwing toys at prams?
Yes.
The customers for Chris Ward and a bit older. There are none perhaps immediately obvious, but there is one huge similarity. When you are running a brand that is devoted to allowing you to do the best for your kids, which is what mm-hmm. Early Learning Centre was about. We were developing essentially educational toys for the early years of child development, and yes. therefore the one of the reasons that we got involved with the brand, and I was sort of parachuted in when it got into trouble in the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. It had been this huge success story in the UK and indeed overseas, and then yes. it got into trouble. John Menzies, who you'll know well from yep. Scotland, they mm-hmm. owned it at the time, and the CEO contacted me and said, would I come and run it? I said no, but my company will run it for you. And Peter and I were parachuted in, and what we in our due diligence about whether we should go there, I was astonished to find that in terms of its brand recognition, it polled third in the UK high street mm-hmm. behind, at the time, Marks and Spencer and Boots. It was that highly regarded, which gave us a clue as to, if we could sort out some of the inefficiencies and all that sort of stuff, there was a chance that this could be rebuilt, which is we're very lucky to be able to do. But the customers of much bigger than Christopher War. I mean, in terms of scale of numbers, I mean, this was a multi-hundred-million-pound empire that stretched into lots of countries as well, largely, as you say, through bricks and mortar. Although we did introduce in 97 one of the very first internet stores, which was partly the reason why we got into doing what we did with Christopher Ward, because we'd mm-hmm. been operating the internet for 6 or 7 years and thought it was the future. But the customers of Early Learning Centre were really intense about the brand itself, and we therefore perhaps weren't as surprised as we might have been without that sort of intensity from those customers about wanting to do the best for their kids, to find that in the world of watches, if you had that certainly, and still the case, the customers certainly of our brand, but of many brands, are intense about the relationship they have with that brand and the watches that are produced. There's a level of intensity that you don't get in most areas of product. And therefore, that's one of the correlations across the two, this power of what you're doing to engage people in a way that most brands and most sectors in business don't ever achieve. So that was that's perhaps the biggest correlation. Mm-hmm. After that, there are others. I mean, you know, we were producing some pretty well-engineered pieces. Beyond that, the complexity of producing a watch is somewhat yeah. different to the complexity of producing a set of funky footprints.
Well, you know? I noticed in January when I was invited along to the event you guys had in Edinburgh, it started off as a get-together for members yeah. of the Christopher Ward Enthusiast Forum.
Yeah.
And I've been to watch meetups before for Red Bar, things like that. But to find a group that were into one brand, but they weren't at the detriment of other brands, they weren't slagging off things, anything like that. They were all there for watches, but they were so intense and dedicated to what you guys were doing, the history. They knew all about it. They were looking forward to finding out more about certain prototypes that you guys were showing off. I'd never seen that before, and I haven't seen it since, being to loads of other events.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. I mean, it is very humbling when you're with these guys, and we subsequently had a similar event in Manchester back in April, and to at one level, you know, they feel so connected to the Christopher Ward brand mm-hmm. that you know they own it, not us. I mean, and it's one of the reasons why you know, when we change something like a logo or the position of a logo, it creates a huge level of furore, of interest, of positives, of negatives.
You're almost like a football team, the way the
yeah,
fans.
Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of a tribalism about it, which is mm-hmm. exactly as you say, is almost old firmish, isn't it? But you know, that is, I'd much rather, and we don't always get it right either, and so we get great feedback from these people, and we do think back to the C60 Trident 3, one of the things that people had suggested we should be improving from Trident 2 was the loom quality. And, you know, these were the guys on the forum, and we have meetings with them in Maidenhead from time to time, particularly the moderators of the forum, so we can bring them up to speed with all things Christopher Ward. And they would consistently tell us that, you know, we needed to. So that was one of the other key things that we looked to establish in T3, is this sort of, you know, improving the loom quality, which we have done by more than a factor of 100%. So, you know, it's great, great feedback for us. And I sometimes it's not all positive, but we only really learn from the negative. So we've got to be big enough to listen to it, and where we think they're right, do something about it. So it's a fantastic piece of ground research for us, which we've, from day one, we've always realised we're very lucky to have. But it is very humbling. I've never worked in a brand, and as I say, I've worked in some pretty powerful brands in my past. Nothing approaches the level of loyalty and interest and ownership that our most loyal fans have for Christopher Ward.
No, definitely. And what you said about the loom there, I'm pretty sure everyone in the cinema that was trying to watch John Wick 3 would agree with you. The loom was pretty damn good.
Hope it didn't ruin the film.
The film was ruined when it was made. It made the film. So that was good. Quick question, you brought up the logo there. Now, obviously, I wasn't as familiar with the brand when things were changing yeah. there. What was the story with changing the logo, and what happened then?
We'd had a logo which for a good while was CHR Ward, Crit Ward, and people actually used to refer to the brand as Crit Ward, not Christopher Ward, literally. And quite a lot of people had complained about it, frankly. I, over time, began to not quite like it because it was a, it was reflecting a, the typeface was a sort of faux historical typeface. And one of the principles of the brand is that we're straightforward and completely honest. And it didn't feel like we were, it looked and felt and was structured in a way that could, that made it look like we had a longer history than we have. Yeah. And at heart, we are a, in some ways, a slightly left of centre brand. But, I mean, we're not typical, yeah? And when we went into a lot of extensive research and development about, because you don't change a logo, you know, on a whim, and this went through a lot of work and research, and we and we ended up really liking the simplicity and the straightforwardness and then the off-centredness of the logo we've got now. And that's quite, as you know, is pretty unusual in the world of watches, that everything has to be 12 o'clock symmetrical. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the things that we try and do always, and don't always achieve, but is to be different. And I think quite reasonably, people in the early years of Christopher Ward, when, to be honest, you know, we were finding our feet in terms of, I was designing watches. I'm not a watch designer, with Chris and with one of our graphic designers, and you know, we were doing the best we could, and we were inevitably being influenced by what was out there. Since bringing on board some of the, you know, one of the finest young watch designers in the world of watches, that who we are so fortunate to have in sort of Adrian Bushman, you know, one of the reasons I wanted him here was because I wanted us to create an increasingly definitive signature look for Christopher Ward, not homages to anything, not derivative, but very much Christopher Ward, which is why we spend so much time on case design, why we, and all elements are, you know, to create something that is distinctively Christopher Ward. And part of that look and part of that distinctiveness is now the logo and the placement of the logo. And when we introduced it, and every time we've introduced it, in just by changing the logo on the same watches, so Trident 2, for instance, started off with the old logo, and then in 2016 we changed to the new one. All that happened was the sales went up. Same watches, same colorways, no changes at all, new logo, sales go up. And every time we've done that, the sales have gone up. And what we've found is, to a large extent, we've been attracting a newer audience, slightly younger audience, which is something we have always wanted to do, but the volume goes up. So commercially, it has been a huge success for us. But I do understand that it's different to, A, where it was, and it's different to what most other brands do. Vive la difference, I say. And, you know, we're not trying to, we're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. And that's okay, actually.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Well, mentioning there about cases and whatnot, one of the things I picked up at your live event in Edinburgh was that you guys have your cases produced by the same mob that put together the cases for the likes of Tag and Tudor.
Yep.
Yep. Just going to leave it like that then. your price point is so much lower, your quality is either the same, comparable, or better. How do you manage to do that?
We have a different model, and this is the story of the brand, really. In 2004, when we left Early Learning Centre, you know, we sold it. We'd bought it off Menzies and then sold it to Tim Watson, he of Watson Books. A bit restless by nature, and you can only spend so much time on a beach. So after about a month, I was looking for what we were going to do next. It's a long, circuitous story, but we were very lucky in that we were able to access parts of the watch industry that many people still wouldn't have accessed had they been in the industry for 30 years. In that journey of discovery, we found that some of the watch brands that we all use the names of frequently were A, all using the same componentry, and B, that same componentry was accessible by us. and two, that they were variously, partly because of the wholesale model being the predominant model in the watch industry, still is, so they had to give a margin to the retailer, which at least doubled the price. But some of them were adding multiples of, and famously one of them, the worst example, or the best, depending on your point of view, I suppose, one famous watch brand in Switzerland was multiplying the cost price of the watch by 34 times, and that was the selling price. So buy something for £100, and they were selling it for £3,400. Now, call me old-fashioned, call me northern. My mother sits on my shoulder most of my life saying, how much? I mean, we the three of us are pretty straightforward northern lads, and had been spent our entire lives in direct-to-consumer models of one sort or another, whether that be just stores or direct mail order, and we'd never come across anything. We thought it was scandalous. So that was the prompt for us to create a business model, i.e. via the internet, in the first instance, so we had a low overhead, but secondly, to be the first serious premium watch brand in the world to go out at retail margins of a multiple of around three. And it's simply our economic model. So we can buy, if we buy something for £200, we'll sell it for £600. Most of the other brands will variously buy the same thing. Let's say it's of equal quality. Yeah, they'll be selling the same thing for a minimum of 1,400. Yeah, and a maximum of you name it. And you know, some of it's because they have a bigger overhead and they have to give a margin to the retailer. So we created this vertical direct-to-consumer premium watch brand, which was at the time, and people said you'll never sell watches off the internet at the time, so it was, but we'd sold climbing frames off the internet, so we thought there was a possibility we could sell watches. Yes. And you know, the good news is that the hunch we had so far, at least, touching wood as I say, this has paid off.
No, definitely. And what you've said there is, you know, you've cut out you basically have done the trope of cutting out the middleman and going direct.
Yeah.
And with all the things we see in all walks of life with consumables, luxury products, etc., you've got manufacturer, distributor, wholesalers, retailers, blah, blah, blah. All these people have to get their profit margin, obviously, to pay things. And when you're saying you've cut all that back, but you're obviously, you've still got overheads, you've still got staff, you've still got research and development, prototyping, testing, marketing, infrastructure, online. So you've still got loads and loads of things to cover. So you guys are obviously doing it right, managing to deliver this product at this price point and still have the quality there that it stands shoulder to shoulder with the likes of those brands that I mentioned earlier.
Well, I mean, we'd like to think so. I mean, the word you mentioned that's uppermost there for us is quality, because the model just takes care of the selling price. So we don't have to, we never think about price. It's just the outcome of what we put in. So everything we do is focused on the quality, which I think sometimes I think we can be accused of not communicating as succinctly as we might have done, because there's still a, you know, a number of people out there who, when they see a Chris Ward watch at the price it's at, assume that it's not of the highest quality.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. All of the emphasis in this business is about the quality of the product. It's just the business model has been set up to deliver that sort of pricing. And that's our differential, if you like.
Yeah. Well, another thing is, you guys, am I right in saying you've got the first in-house movement developed from a British brand in 50 years?
Well, it's 55 years now. It's 55 years, in fact, yeah.
So that's something that maybe some of our listeners don't know about as well. Can you give us a little bit more information about how that came to be and what the process was like for you?
By all means. Back in, I suppose, the genesis of it was back in 2010, when there was a belief, and well-founded, in fact, that the Swatch Group, who were providing most of the industry with most of their movements, that they were looking to restrict movement supply to third parties. I think you and many of your listeners will know this. And back in 2010, the industry was very concerned about this. We were concerned about it for obvious reasons. And that prompted us to think about creating a movement, should we need it, that would mean we weren't reliant on the Swatch Group for movements. As time's gone on, of course, those worst fears of restriction of movements has all vanished. But what it did do, and I think it's an unintended consequence, certainly from Swatch Group's view, it spawned a really intense period of innovation as people looked to overcome what they assumed is going to be a very difficult situation. Uh-huh. We were part of that, but the others were people like the Richemont Group, who had a bit more resource than we had. What they didn't have, though, was a guy called Johannes Janka, who was our master watchmaker at the time. And working with Johannes, we decided to fund. He convinced us that he had the potential to design a five-day power reserve movement that was going to be as robust and as reliable a workhorse as, say, the 7750, and as simple to repair and as long-lasting as the 7750 has proven to be. And because we knew, Johannes had by this time created JJ calibers for us. He'd done the jumping hour, he'd done the single pusher chronograph, and he was in the process of developing the world timer module for us. And so we funded the development of Calibras H21, which took 4 years to bring to market, and done in a very different way to the industry. So we did it for a fraction of the cost and in a fraction of the time it takes many of the larger groups to do it, because we're smaller, but we're also more nimble and more agile around this sort of stuff. And Johannes and the team were more creative around where they would go to get certain parts manufactured. So we were using the medical industry, for instance, at one time to produce certain parts. So really innovative piece of, because the medical industry are well used to producing precision parts, aren't they? So it was a really innovative process that was born and presented to the world on July the 2nd, 2014, and created a stir, because as the chief executive of a very famous watch brand said at the time, Swiss watch brand, what gives you the license to do that? In other words, I rather like that, because it said something about the myopia of the industry. But we weren't, people like us of our size, and certainly a British brand, not supposed to be involved in that sort of stuff. You're not supposed to be able to do it. But we did, and we're very proud of what we've done, and it still remains a key part of our collection.
Cool. Alrighty. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Sorry, okay, Rick, so I commandeered this.
It's usually the other way around.
I'm having a great time here. I'm doodling on my paperwork and all sort.
I'm glad. You're on Tinder.
So that's right. So my question is, what is the ambition?
What we're really trying to do here is build a brand and a business, a great brand and a great business, and we're not there yet. Yeah, and unlike the world has moved to short cycle companies. Yeah,
yes,
that's not what we want Chris Ford to be about. We're trying to build a business and a brand that can last at least a generation and hopefully more. It means that we're not going to see that out. I won't be here in 25 years' time. I hope I'm still here, but I'm not sure I'll be. Doing a podcast with you guys. There'll be somebody else in this chair. So we're trying to build something fundamentally strong from the base up. Mm-hmm. And all businesses, no matter what sector they're in, are completely dependent on people. And we are lucky to have some outstanding people across the company, both here and in Biel. And that generation are already making their mark on this business and will continue to do so. But yes, we want to grow this business. We think that, it's a bit portentous. It's a bit, I don't often say it, but what we set out, we really set out to, the popular phrase would be to democratize premium watches. We genuinely want as many, there's something incredibly visceral about owning and wearing a fine piece of precision engineering on your wrist. I mean, that's kind of the thing that gets us all who are interested in watches. You can't properly describe it, but it's just something that you feel. And we believe and want as many people in the world to experience that, which means we created this business to allow access to as many people to achieve that as possible, which is why we go out at three times the price multiple, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now, still and all, you know, these are not cheap items and not everybody's going to access it, but we've opened the world of fine watches up to a much wider audience than ever existed back in 2004. We're tiny still, you know. We're a fleck on the backside of the watch world, and so we want to grow. And as long as we focus on the quality of what we do, as long as we've got energy, as long as we've got fans who buy into what we're about, as long as we remain humble and get lucky, and luck plays a big part in the Chris Ward story, and long may that continue. Then we want this business to grow and grow and grow, but be here for a very long time. And so the interest is continuing to do what we do, but better and better and better, and take it to a wider and wider audience. And it's as simple and as difficult as that, I suppose.
That's great. And you guys, when you got this in-house movement and whatnot, am I right in saying that you amalgamated with another firm to move things forward?
Yeah, in 2008, we'd come across York Bader and Synergy Horloger. We were looking to upgrade our manufacturing base, our supply base, and in Switzerland. And again, got very lucky. We bumped into York, who had a business of similar size. But more importantly, he was steeped in the history of Swiss watchmaking. His father used to work in Grenken, in a movement factory, etc. And Jörg had been in watchmaking all his life. So Here's somebody who's really steeped in Swiss watchmaking. But he also realised that when he heard about Chris Ward and the model that we applied, he was immediately bought into this vision, this mission of trying to make fine watches accessible to as many people as possible. And he became our sole manufacturer, sole supplier back in 2008, and we worked incredibly closely. It was he who employed Johannes Janke. So we were, for years, from 2010, we were almost indivisible anyway. And then come 2014, it was natural that we decided to make that formal, if you like, and we formally merged as a business. On the day we announced Calibre SH21 on July the 2nd, 2014. And so we are a merged business with a centre here in Maidenhead and a centre in our atelier is in Biel. So they are they're you know, it's one company. It's you know, Christopher Ward SA is proudly on the other side of our atelier in Biel now, and we again, back to luck playing its part in any story. We were very lucky to come across York Bader.
Well, leading from that, we touched on it briefly, and I want to go back to it again. You guys mentioned back in January about what you're doing for the environment and packaging materials and things like that. Now, obviously, the watch I've got in for review came in a lovely wooden box. Can you give us more information on the environmental issues and how you guys are working towards reducing that?
I think the watch industry per se, the luxury industry in general, isn't particularly well known for doing its bit ecologically. And we're not saying that we're perfect either, because there's always more any of us could do. But, you know, if there are any, you know, some of the bigger issues that we're facing as a society, as a world, are, as we all know, are to do with climate change. Therefore, in the values that we hold dear as a business and a brand, trying to do our bit became something quite important for us. And so we cast around thinking, well, what bit is it that we can do? And because we ship boxes around the world, we're currently selling into 120 countries, for instance, you know, that's a carbon, and they all fly, that's a carbon footprint. And then we realised that the boxes we're sending them in, and this was actually prompted by customers as well, back to that feedback I was referring to earlier. We'd introduced, not that long ago, a magnificent, if I say so myself, magnificent box to present our watches in. Part of the ceremony of opening Christopher Ward was the packaging. But a number of people commented, you know, well, it's a bit big, and, you know, is all of this degradable? And we had to hold our hands up and say, well, no, it isn't. So I briefed Adrian to come up with something that that would change that, reduce the footprint. So it's a smaller box. It's 40% smaller. So it's carbon footprint going across the world is smaller. But more interestingly, we engaged with a luxury packaging supplier, and this packaging supplier is supplying to LVMH, Richemont, you name it, you know, not just watches, the luxury sector. And we were surprised to find that nobody in watches had ever considered producing a biodegradable, a compostable piece of packaging. And so we're not big enough to say to that, you know, our quantity is not big enough for them to put their worldwide resources at our disposal to do this. But what we said to them, they also bought into this philosophy, what can we do? And we said to them, look, you know, we're not interested in doing this just for ourselves, because we're not going to, you know, yes, we can make a little difference, but actually if we together create something that we're prepared to not be exclusive on, then others may pick it up and run with it, and we're giving freely, you know, our development to anybody who wants to use it. So for 6 months, these guys worked with Adrian and me on working through what materials were truly compostable and truly biodegradable, and we ended up creating what I think is a beautiful piece of packaging that just happens to be virtually entirely degradable. Now we know, many people, you and I both know, many people want to retain a beautiful box that they receive the watch in. But if you're like me, you need to buy a second house to contain all the boxes. So many people want, so this is, you can stick this on your compost heap, and you know, if you don't want to hold on to it, and it will degrade. And but more importantly, I think it's a beautiful piece of packaging. So it's not,
no, it is.
You know, it's I hope it is anyway, and thank you for saying so. But it's not brown rice. This is beauty, but it's also delivering something worthwhile. It's our small effort to do something. I mean, it's here. We're not claiming it's changing the world. But again, you know, if you can, you do, don't you? And we can, and we did.
Well, it's interesting because I got a magazine through the post just yesterday from Nikon, because my profession is photography, videography. And I looked at it and it felt kind of strange, the packaging material. And when I read inside, they were making this big song and dance about they're going to be sending out their magazines not wrapped in cellophane or whatever. They're now using potato starch. So put this in your compost heap.
Well, exactly right. And they're not alone. So for instance, I'm a member of the National Trust, and the National Trust have been sending their magazines out in potato starch wrapping for some considerable time. We've gone one stage further. We, as you know, have our Loop magazine, which we distribute 4 times a year to many thousands of people across the world. In the UK, we now send it out naked, so it has no wrapping on it at all.
Oh.
Yeah. So we,
which is fine, except for the fact that I have an outside post box.
Oh,
and no! And it's not very watertight.
Oh, no!
But it'll be good news to you that actually the magazine does dry off quite well.
Well, I can lend you an iron.
Oh, man. So, no, it's... I had noticed. Yeah. It had not passed my attention that it was now arriving.
And that's why we've done
arriving
that.
Naked.
That's why we've done that to be... Yeah, because we did some test mailings before.
Obviously not to Scotland.
Obviously, well, no, because the sun never shines up there, does it?
I mean, absolutely. This is half the problem. It's half the problem. So when you're not wearing a Christopher Ward watch, what are you wearing? Because I'm assuming you didn't get into this with nothing as a previous owner.
I'll be absolutely honest. I only these days, and for a long time, I'll only wear Christopher Ward in any guise. I do have... a collection of watches, however, that occasionally, if I know, I'll be wearing. I was always a... I've got some, I love them, Omega Constellations going back to the mid-60s,
cool.
Which is I love. I've always been a big fan of IWC, particularly early IWC. Last 7-8 years, I'm a little less impressed. But if you go back 20 years, for me, they were they had this bold, simple, strong aesthetic and superb quality. And so, you know, Spitfire 15s, 14s, I'm a collector of. But really, I've still got the Tissot that my parents bought me for my 21st, which I'm just about to organise a new strap for. But really, you know, you wouldn't expect me to wear anything other than a Christopher Ward most of the time, would you?
Not a Roger Smith, no.
Yeah, well, fair enough. It would only seem fair for you to now go and buy a Roger Smith watch, surely.
Yeah, well, that's. I read one of the posts on his Instagrams, and that was. I think that's been suggested, hasn't it? If you lend me some money, then I'll do that.
You could probably sell the entire company and maybe buy one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I aspire to own a Roger Smith. Put it that way.
And you would probably have to wait 20 years to get it. I don't know if it works the way that it works at Aston Martin. I don't know if he sends you a small one. Maybe that's what you should do. Maybe you need to do a deal. You need to do it. No. Here's an idea. You need to do a deal with Roger Smith that says for every Roger Smith watch that gets ordered, you will send the person a Christopher Ward Trident to wear prior to the Roger Smith watch.
What an excellent idea.
So there you go. You heard it here first, folks.
And the good news is that'll only cost me 13 watches.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good bit. It's the ideal bit of PR. It costs you very
little. Absolutely fantastic. I like that. Next time I meet him, I might suggest that to him.
There you go. That's good stuff. You can have that one for free. The next one will, however, cost you. finally, from my point of view, you made a GPHG submission last year of your Calibre 21. Can we expect something this year also being submitted?
Possibly. We're toying with the idea of putting up the Apex. Timing's going to be important. We're pretty well down the line in terms of developing our C60 Apex at the moment, which is a stunning watch. It'll retail around the £3,500 mark. We'll produce 100 of them. We're doing it in conjunction with, I think we have a good working relationship with Armin Strom, who are 7 minutes walk away from our atelier. And I think, again, a bit like the Roger Smith thing, although they are operating at a different end of the market. I mean, you know, 180,000 francs is sort of the last price of one of the watches that I looked at. They share similar values, we set them challenges that they don't normally have set them. We work on the top end of our watches with Armin Strom, and they're working on the C60. So it depends on timings to what we put in. We don't really chase the awards thing very much. But if we think there's something worthy of entry, we will put it forward. The other one that I personally think is well worthy of entry is the C60 Trident Elite, the titanium case at the top of the new collection, which is virtually sold out.
What's the difference with that one compared to the normal one?
The difference are, A, it's a titanium case, helium release valve included in it. It goes down to 1,000 meters, and the movement is cost. So it's bells and whistles. It's a 300-piece limited edition. It went on sale. It's £1,250 in hybrid. It has a hybrid strap that we developed especially for it, and it's now, I think we're down to the last six or something. It's virtually sold out.
You said that one was COSC. So is there a different? Is it a different movement, or has it just been regulated?
No, it's still an SW200, but it's a different level of SW200 for it to go through and become a chronometer. You have to raise the standard of the movement, so we present all of those watches to COSC, and they put it through the 5 tests, very stringent tests, and it, you know, therefore confirms its fantastic accuracy. So it costs more, obviously, but the base movement is a higher caliber as well. So it's a very special watch, and at 1250, it's it's astonishing value, really.
It's interesting you say that, because the one that obviously has been sent out to test, this is one of the normal editions, and this is probably, in my watch box of maybe 30 watches, most of them shit, but some good ones as well, this is the most accurate alongside my Rolex at plus 2 seconds a day.
Yeah, well, we regulate, I mean, the guarantee is plus or minus 20 on that, but we regulate every watch so that we're always striving to achieve far better than we are. So the aim of everybody is always, or should be, to, you know, under-promise and over-deliver. And that's why we spend time regulating. Now, you know, to get to that level of accuracy that you're achieving, isn't we don't achieve that on every watch, but we always will achieve better than that which we say is the minimum guarantee. So I'm not surprised to hear that. But a COSC one will be even more accurate, because the guarantee is, you know, a quarter of the level of, or four times the accuracy level of the Pro, and therefore you'll get some that are well within, even within your the tolerance you're achieving. So these are very accurate mechanical movements.
Yeah, definitely, and that's interesting because it's Sellita, and a lot of people, probably not thinking properly about things, as they reckon that ETA is always better than Sellita, but I've actually found the Sellita movements to be as good as, if not sometimes better.
And we have exactly the same experience. One of the things that I think most people won't be aware of, perhaps, but I mentioned Johannes Janka, who was the creator of our Calibre SH21. He now works for Sellita. And one of the things I know Johannes really has helped them achieve is an improvement in things like the quality of some aspects of the moves. And in our tests, and we test every single movement that we receive, believe me, Sellita ranks as good, if not better, consistently than anybody else.
Magic. That's great. Right, Rick, you wanted to talk, and I keep cutting you off because I've actually got questions.
Yeah, you
to ask.
Do. I was just going to say that you need to note that the really expensive watch was the one they sent Adrian, but they sent you the one that wasn't the really expensive one. And I think that's a scandal. I think that's because we're Scottish, and I think that's because we're not on telly.
Exactly. So, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah, he gets to keep his. We have to send ours back. I know how the game goes.
Yeah. So, and I am sitting here with my own, because he hasn't asked me.
Yeah.
I am sitting here with my own Christopher Ward,
ah,
paid for with my very own cash.
Oh, well done you.
Which is a COSC certified, but it's quartz.
Ah, right, and okay.
It is
C7,
one,
yeah?
No. It is the C70.
C70, yeah.
It is the British Racing Green, of which you made only 88.
Yes, I remember.
Because you changed the logo.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
right.
So rather than 500, you just made what you had cased up. So no, I have one of them. It's a lovely watch.
It is a great watch, actually.
But for that reason, I think the next time you're launching something, you need to send us exactly the same thing as you send that BAMPOT down south. In fact, he's moving to Scotland.
Glasgow.
So there is then no excuse to send him and be all biased about sending it to your mates in England, because he'll be Scottish by then.
Yeah.
So we need some equitable treatment here.
We also drove past where he's moving to yesterday.
Point noted.
As Ricky just said, we drove past where he's moving to yesterday, and if I was you, I wouldn't be sending him anything, because it'll probably get nicked in the post.
Is that right?
On the way there. Yeah.
Okay. Has he moved in yet? He told me a while back that he's. I thought he'd moved already. No.
No. He's still experiencing issues in getting out of England. Do you think that the likes of him, they'd be chasing them out?
Do we need a visa yet to get into Scotland?
Not quite yet.
That's post Brexit. Yeah.
There's issues of us actually letting them into Scotland. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. You don't want the criminal classes in Scotland, do you?
Exactly. He's not passed the purity test yet.
All right. Well, listen, I think that is a really good episode in the can. So, Rick, do you want to do the wrap up for us?
Yes. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you. Mike, for coming on the show, and do let us know when you eventually decide to set up Mike France watches, because one of us will join and you can just call it Rick Watch instead. So give us a shout when all that kicks off. So yeah, thank you for joining us. Thank you everyone for listening. You can check out our social media at www.scottishwatches.co.uk and the same at Instagram at Scottish Watches. Mike, where should people go to find Christopher Ward online?
Well, if they're in the UK, then chrisward.co.uk, but we also have seven other sites, including switzerland.ch, europe.eu.com in the States, etc., etc.
Before you go, have you got any scoops of things coming up that we can let people know about?
I'd have to kill you if I told you, so I'll keep it to myself.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Just tell him and then send the voice round. I have no problem with that whatsoever. So tell him, kill him. No problem.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. I've enjoyed this so much, you'd never invite me again.
You don't send us decent watches next time rather than Adrian, we may not invite you again anyway.
I don't come onto a podcast to be threatened, you know.
Then your marketing people failed to brief you properly.
They clearly and did. I shall have words with
and
them.
And should be
I
dismissed hereafter.
Yeah, there'll be a horse's good head stuff turning up in someone's bed shortly.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us. So in closing, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh.